Firstly, I just want to say, I love the gospel-centered worship this morning. Did you enjoy it? So much of, and the beautiful presence of the Lord here this morning. It's such a privilege to be in this church where you can just sense the tangible presence of the Lord during worship. It's something not to just take for granted. And even while walking up to the church this morning, I was chatting to Anton and just saying, you know, if life is just always perfect, we were talking about life, bills and all that kind of stuff, you know, walking into church. He says, you know, if life is perfect all the time, something's wrong and you can't be involved with the gospel then. You may think that's a bit bleak. Nick, how can you say that? That's a little bleak. But I was just reminded, even during the worship, the Lord just saying that, yo, you can be involved in church activities and everything is cool, but get involved in the gospel. Sure, very different. Allow the gospel to affect your life. Very different. It's not as nice as it always may sound. All right? And it's, and I don't want to be bleak, like what? A day or two before Christmas? No. There was a word that I received from the Lord recently. And I felt like it's for this church too. And the picture I had was of someone who is very keen. You know, we have all these big concerts and everyone wants to be in the golden circle. That's the place where you stand and the singer, the reason why, let's face it, why do you want to be there? It's when the main, that rock star, the person you idolize, is up on the stage and you could almost reach out to touch that person. I remember when I was at the U2 concert a many good number of years ago, I was in the golden circle. I paid 2,500 rand, I think, for that. And I was totally prepared for that because I love U2. And along comes Bono on the outer circle. And I remember he was like almost here. And I was like, yeah! Because I wanted eye contact with him. I wanted to have a moment where I could say, hey, I engaged Bono. Yes! And the Lord reminded me just the other day. He says, you know, Nick, when you get close to me, just like in a big concert, you want my gaze. Just like you paid that 2,500, which wasn't a lot of money compared to what you will pay when you look me straight in the eyes and you want to walk according to my ways and according to the gospel message. It will cost you. It's going to cost you. Yes. Friends, the good news is that we're in a church that is, and I almost said hell-bent on the gospel, heavenly bent on this gospel message. We are so privileged. So this morning, my message is called Wedding Crashes. Some of you seen the movie, early 2000s, Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, two men who master the art of crashing weddings. So you may ask yourself, what does it mean to crash a wedding? Maybe some of the older folk here are totally lost right now. I'll tell you what it means. It means that you pitch up at a wedding totally unannounced, not invited, and you kind of just blend in with the festivities. And in this case, with wedding crashes, they put on their suits, they look the part, and if you've got an air of confidence, and you look like you should be there, people will believe that you should just be there. You're just part of the party. No one would ask a question. You can walk around, grab a drink, chat some people. And in this case, they were chatting girls up and maybe even leaving the wedding with a beautiful girl on the arm, in their case. Now, the Bible tells a story about a man, and it's actually Jesus telling a parable about a man who tried his hand at wedding crashing, but not with the greatest success. And I want you to allow me to recite that particular parable and imagine that you are in the crowd right now. Jesus was in front of a very hostile crowd. There were some Pharisees around, Sadducees. They were trying to trip him up. And that is what gave birth to this parable. So there was a king and his son is getting married. The king calls his servants and he asks them to go out to the people that had already been invited. He says, go out to the people that have been invited and tell them they can now come to the wedding banquet. So the servants go out and they come back and they tell the king, King, no one's responded. So the king says, don't worry, just go out again. But this time, tell them that the fattened oxen are ready, that the party stands ready, and all they have to do is just come and be part of the joyous occasion. So they go out the second time. This time the people are a little dismissive. One says, no, I've got to go attend to my field. Another one, I've got some business matters to deal with. Still others begin to attack the laborers, the workers, the servants, and even kill them. Those remaining servants go back to the king. They tell him what happened. He is infuriated. He gets his army together. He says, go and kill those people that killed my servants. They go out and they kill those particular people and they burn down their city. How do you like that? Some harsh action. So the king says to his servants, well, those people who didn't come, they actually didn't deserve to come. So now I tell you, go out to everyone, to the highways and the byways and all over the place, and invite everyone to come to the wedding banquet. And that's what they did. And it was the day of the wedding banquet. The wedding hall was filled with people. The king walks into the wedding hall and he sees a man standing there who looks like he shouldn't be there. He walks over to the man. He says, excuse me, sir. What are you doing here? Because you're not wearing wedding clothes. The man was speechless. He couldn't say a word. The king called some of his attendants. He says, tie this man up hand and foot and throw him out into the darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. Let's just pray together, friends. Lord, the gospel message is good news, and we thank you for it. But today, we recognize that this is also serious news to which we are to respond. And I pray that this morning, that we would be called to a more serious walk in terms of your message, the gospel. And if there be anyone here this morning, by your Spirit, that you would touch anyone who has not yet responded to your call and bring them to yourself in Jesus' name. Amen. So I'm married, as most of you know, to Mariska. Went through the whole thing of, you know, inviting people to our wedding, which was held in Cape Town. So you put the wedding list together, and then you go through the pain of sending out the invitations, and you try and avoid hundreds of arguments because of who was invited and who wasn't. You know the whole story. You've been through it, right? You know what it's like. When you're done with that, especially if you're the guy, you're just so glad that it's all over. Even the wedding. I thank the Lord this is over. Now we can just have our lives together. Men, do you agree? The ladies are like, this is our big day. You know? But over here, friends, when I look at the text, the first thing that I see is that Jesus talks about the already invited. He tells the servants, the king in this story, tells the servants to go out and tell those who had already been invited that they must now come to the wedding. And I want to ask you, who were these people? Who were the already invited? Who was it? It was the Jews. And there was a man named John the Baptist, or John the Baptizer more accurately, who went and prepared the way for Jesus, who told the people, and even more specifically the Jewish nation, the king is coming, the Messiah, he's on his way. But that message was rejected. Not once, not twice, but numerous occasions, that message was just flatly rejected. Now, I don't know about you, but if I send out an invitation and no one responds, what would your response be? That's pretty rude. I mean, how many times would I have to invite you to come and be part of something till you eventually come? I would hope that if I send out the invitation once, that would be enough. That would suffice. And either you're coming or you're not. At least just respond. But in this case, the Jewish nation was dismissive and they didn't want to know anything about Jesus, the coming Messiah. Mariska and I, in Cape Town, 1 week leading up to our wedding, we were in a Pick and Pay, and we were busy paying for our goodies. Mariska says to the cashier, "We're getting married on Saturday." The cashier looks at Mariska and says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I can't make it." To which I thought, well, were you invited? Now, any African people here this morning, what does that mean? If you're told about a wedding, it means what? You're invited. I was still trying to figure that out. I didn't remember giving that lady an invitation. But in this case, friends, the people needed to respond. And there are eternal consequences in this matter. This isn't just a matter of, this is just any old wedding. You know, I'll skip this one. This one carries serious weight because it carries eternal consequences. I want to go back to the text. The king says this, "Tell the people, I've prepared the fat and oxen, and everything is ready." You know, honestly, at this point, I really would have just removed the people from the list. And the people are dismissive on top of all of that. Servants get killed. Things happen. And there's harsh and strict action that takes place when all of this plays out. Friends, I think there's a message in that that Jesus is showing us. Is that when you want to reject the gospel to that degree where violence, and I'm telling you now, I'm sure we're going to see some violent action taking place into the future against those who bring the gospel message. But those people will be seriously dealt with. There was serious action for those who killed those servants. Then listen to what the king says next. Then he said to his servants, "The wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come." So that tells me that there are people that don't deserve to be at the great banquet one day. There are actually people like that. Otherwise, Jesus wouldn't have said that. And it's the people that have been asked once, twice, three times, four, five, six, seven, eight, "Come and be part of this banquet." I've got other things to do. I've got to go and ride my boat on the dam. I've got to go off and attend to my business. I've got to go to that braai. I've got other things to do. And you end up doing it, you know, I'll just do it my way. You know, the old blue eyes way. I did it my way. Frank Sinatra. It's not the safest way, friends. In fact, I call that the anthem of the devil. I did it my way. It's not the safest way. It's a very dangerous way. What is the best thing that you can do when you receive the call of God? Just like, you know, Arthur, the Arthur theme tune. If you get caught between the moon and New York City, what's the best thing you can do? Fall in love. If God calls you, what is the best thing you can do? Respond. You respond to His call. You don't say, God, maybe another day. Maybe I'll answer that call. You know, it's sort of when it best fits me. May I also say, friends, that some of us as messengers, some of us are very involved in evangelism with people like John or teams that are going out, and just in our lives, we should be ready to preach this gospel message. I want to ask you, how tolerant are you when it comes to people of other faith? So in other words, if a Jew was standing in front of you, some people I pick up, and it may be not in this church, but you hear that, oh, there's this level of tolerance. The Jew, let the Jew be the Jew. Let the Muslim be the Muslim. Let the Hindu be the Hindu. It's almost like saying, oh, you're going to die, and I'm just going to be tolerant about that. I'm not going to ruffle your feathers. I'm not going to tell you that Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven, because it could just spoil our relationship. We can't be like that, friends. In actual fact, again, I'm mentioning my wife, but she was in hospital recently at Lingsfield, and she had a young lady next to her in the bed, and she was very nervous. She was going for a procedure. Okay, I'll be honest, she was going for a boob job. The lady next to my wife. Yeah? Very nervous. She was sort of on edge. Her mom was with her. And about 10 minutes before she was going to be wheeled into theater, I could see she's not coping. So I said to her, hey, can I pray for you? And she knew I'm a pastor at that point. Mariska had already told a lot about us and all that. And she said, yeah, sure, you can pray for me, but I'm a Jew. I said, well, that's fine. Is there anything wrong? Like, as if there's something wrong with it. So I prayed with her, and of course, I prayed the most Christocentric prayer I could pray. In the name of Jesus, and that you peace would come upon Nicole, and that she would just find the love of Jesus in this moment. And when we were done with the prayer, I must admit, I was slightly nervous, because now I'm praying with Jews, for goodness sake. You know? And when I opened my eyes, her mom was busy wiping tears from her face. She said, oh, I've just been touched. This is amazing. Friends, you know, many of us in that moment, I know, you just want to go and seal the deal right there. Okay, give your life to Jesus right now. And I didn't feel that. Some of you may think, well, Nick, come on, you missed out on an opportunity right there. No, no, no. Maybe the clock was just moved a little bit closer to the time where somebody else, another servant, comes along and helps to seal the deal. But at least the message of Jesus was brought to that Jewish mom and daughter. And they knew that it was in the name of Jesus that they were touched. They probably experienced something that they'd never experienced before. And that's a beautiful thing. And that's all we have to do, friends. We don't have to be working to bring somebody over the line. Have you noticed how some people can be like that? You just want to get them over the line so they can be saved. Maybe you've just created your own convert, but they're not truly saved. It's a change of heart, friends. It's not just, oh, I'm being polite right now because you are pushing me to accept Jesus. So I'll just say, okay, I'll accept Jesus. In the meanwhile, nothing has changed in that person's heart. There are two big moments in your life when God happens to you. When God calls you to salvation, there's eternal consequences. And number two, when God sets into motion the plan He has for your life. And that can only happen when you give your life to Jesus. There are so many people walking around not knowing what they must do with their lives. What's the purpose of my life? I don't know. Why do I exist? How about responding to the message of Jesus first? And then He will begin to unfold the plan and the purpose that He has for your life. And in both of these, friends, you have no say. It is God who initiates. It's God who sets all of those things into motion. Let's go on to verse 9 of this text. I like to preach directly from the text, as you may well have noticed. So the king says, so go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find. We can thank God for this, right? Anyone you find. So not just like the Jews. Jesus was the king of the Jews. But anyone. Which means that everyone is invited. The gospel message is for everyone, friends. Every single person. Then we read in verse 10. So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, the bad as well as the good. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. Bad and good. Now, before salvation, that could be a relative term. Relativity in the world today is quite a big thing. In actual fact, you may be sitting here and you ascribe to some of that thinking. It's relative. Your good is your good and my good is my good. Your bad is your bad and my bad is my bad. It's relative. But according to whose terms, friends? Ask yourself. According to whose terms? It's the terms of Jesus Christ and the standards of Jesus Christ. The one actually telling the parable. It's according to His standards. And He alone is good and He is the ultimate standard of good. If I may say so, He is absolute goodness, which flies in the face of relativity. If you do ascribe to relativity and that type of thinking, that philosophy. You see, friends, Jesus judges according to very high standards. You know whose standards? His own. His standards could not be any higher. Because His standard is perfection. Perfection was murdered on the cross. But His perfection becomes our perfection. Friends, it's completely irrelevant how you come. Some people are worried about how they come to meet Jesus. It's irrelevant. Whether you think you are good or bad, as long as you become His standard of good. That's the most important thing. You just need to become His standard of good. And that is when, at salvation, you become the righteousness of God. His standard of good is He Himself, Jesus. When you accept Him, and you become the righteousness of God, that's all you need. It's called imputed righteousness. The way I often describe it is it's like, and I'm sorry, it's going to be quite graphic, but it's like peeing into a swimming pool. Right? And now you try and take the pee out. Some of you are picturing that right now. It's very hard. It's a difficult thing to do. You are imputed with His righteousness. It's as though righteousness is flowing through your veins. It's all over you. It just can't leave you. It's there. It's part of you. It's in the fibers of your body. It's in every cell. It's like little, you know, little microscope-sized words saying righteous, 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 all over you. You just can't get away from it. It's a beautiful thing. The righteousness of Jesus. Let's continue in the text. Verse 11 and 12. But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. He asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? The man was speechless. The man was speechless. Now, some of us have this idea, right? That you can live your life, and I've heard so many people saying this, especially at youth, I remember. hey man, I'm just going to live my life. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to just do whatever I like. Then one day, when I stand before God, if there even is a God, right, I will just tell Him, look, I've done some really good things. And I'm sure He'll let me in. In other words, He'll let me into the wedding feast. But Jesus is giving us a little bit of a hint over here, friends. Tell me, when you stand before the Maker of heaven and earth, do you think you're going to be able to speak? You will speak with His permission. I tell you now, I don't think it's going to be possible for you to even open your mouth. With God standing right in front of you, with Jesus, the one who died on the cross, who paid for you, the resurrected Christ, Maker of heaven and earth, and you think, I'm just going to come there with a quick argument, and then He's just going to let me in, and I'll just breeze in there. You are seriously mistaken. Seriously, you will be speechless. And to this, I would say, oh me. Because that guy, he thought that he could walk in to that wedding banquet and just blend in. But what was the problem? He didn't have robes of righteousness on. He didn't respond to the call. He just breezed in there thinking, oh, well, I'll just be part of this thing. Didn't work, friends. He was sticking out like a sore thumb. That's what happened that day. And he was dealt with. People who think they can access heaven by sidestepping the cross will be rudely awakened. Jesus makes this absolute statement in John 14, verse 6. Again, I'm talking in absolute terms. We have to be real about this, friends. You've got to ask yourself, where do you stand with the gospel message? Is it kind of like a nice message that I can bend a little bit, or is it the absolute truth? Because Jesus was very good at making absolute statements. And this is what He says about Himself. Sorry. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. So notice, friends, He doesn't say, I am a way, I am a truth, and I am a life, like the universalists would want you to say it. In other words, you know, we all just going to sing Kumbaya in heaven one day. Doesn't matter what you believe. We're all just going to be in heaven. No. Otherwise, Jesus would have said, I am a truth. But He's making absolute statements by saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And this raises a pertinent question, friends. What do you believe about Jesus? Secretly, you could be sitting there saying, yeah, I've got my own little theory on the gospel. I remember a few years ago, I was chatting to a teacher in the area, and she said, Nick, I'm one of those naughty Christians. I was like, oh, really? What does that mean? Well, you know, I believe that in the end, we all just go to heaven. You can be a Muslim, you can be a Jew, you can be whatever. In the end, we all just say, in other words, she has universalistic beliefs. We all just go to heaven. I thought to myself, well, what then was the point of the cross? That Jesus would die on the cross, would suffer the death that He suffered, and then we all just, it doesn't matter. There are many ways to just find your way to heaven. In actual fact, Paul himself had many gripes with the Jewish believers, the believers who had come to faith in Jesus, Jewish people, who would, by default, keep going back to the law, sticking to the letter of the law. And he would say, but you're making a mockery of the cross. In other words, what's the point of Jesus dying on the cross if you keep sticking to the letter of the law? Jesus is the law perfected. You need Jesus, not the letter of the law. I want to come back to the fact that the man was speechless. What comes after that makes me slightly speechless? Verse 13. The king tells his attendants, tie him hand and foot, and throw him outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Sure. Again, I have to remind myself that Jesus is telling this story. This isn't gentle Jesus. This isn't, oh, sweet Jesus. You know, the Jesus that sometimes we can be a little flippant with. When you read that, you recognize who is at work here and who is issuing this warning through this parable. It's not difficult to know what's going on here, right? This man was bound up and thrown out into the outer darkness, which is what? Hell. Gehenna. The place where God does not dwell. Where He is not there. You know, God, and that is hell. Not being in the presence of God. Being absent of His presence. And I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to be there, friends. Right now, you are enjoying His overall grace. If we can put it that way. In other words, you are blanketed. Even if you're sitting here this morning with your arms folded and you think, I can't wait for this guy to be finished. Because my mom dragged me to church this morning. You are in God's grace right now. Whether you like it or not. Because you're busy hearing this. You're experiencing His grace. When the sun comes up, you're experiencing His grace. It's called overall grace. A day is coming when it's going to be over. When the trumpets sound and you see Jesus and you won't need faith anymore, and then it's over for you. Then you can't say, oh, I see now, now I believe. Sorry for you. Sorry for you now. Friends, in closing, number one, many are called to participate in the kingdom, to be subject to the king. But unfortunately, many reject this call. And for that, there are consequences. Number two, you need to be clothed in garments of righteousness. This is the righteousness of Jesus. Without this, you can't enter the kingdom. You can't. Isaiah 61 verse 10, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall exalt my God. For He has clothed me with garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom decks himself like a priest with a beautiful headdress, and a bride adorns herself with her jewels. Number three, the call to participate in the kingdom is still valid right here and right now by His grace. Right now. But many will say, how is it possible that God could send people to hell? And as we've heard it so many times from this pulpit, we have, haven't we? That God hasn't sent a single person to hell. People choose for themselves. If you spend your life rejecting Jesus, you don't want to know Him. I don't want to know Him. I don't want to hear. I've got to go off and do my thing right now. And you keep doing that, and then you die, and you find yourself in a place where now you are answering to God. He's going to give you what you always wanted, was not to know Him. And that is life absent of His presence forever. I remember Greg gave a picture of what that's like when he did that Oh Hell, I think it was Oh Hell, right? Or What the Hell series. When you are in a state of almost being like being locked in a coffin. Just imagine that. You're locked in a coffin and you feel like you can't breathe and you're left alone to your own thoughts, absent of God's presence forever. You want that? For many are invited, but few are chosen. In the end, few choose.